Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens, families, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. In her recent book, The Green Amendment, Securing Our Rights to a Healthy Environment, author Meyer K. Van Rossum advocates for the protection of our environment as a constitutional right. Our right to a healthy environment should be protected as firmly as we protect other fundamental rights, like freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and property rights. Environmental activist Maya K. Van Rossum joins students from Sale High School. Maya is a veteran environmentalist and an environmental attorney. She's also the executive director of the Delaware Riverkeepers Network, an organization that has successfully stalled fracking and pipeline development in the Northeast. Maya K. Van Rossum, welcome to 411 Teen.
I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, and we're so glad to have you. And two of my favorite students from Sale High School, I'm always glad to have both of you, Isabella Rose. Isabella is a graduating senior. She's going to be leaving me. She is into photography and environment and politics.
Oh, yes, I'm very excited to be here. I'm so excited to have this opportunity to talk to Maya.
And Jude Countryman. Jude, I got you for another year. He is a junior, and he's into video making and editing.
Hi, nice to be here.
Glad to have you, too. Maya, I'll start out with you. You know, what is a Green Amendment? What are you talking about?
So a Green Amendment is a provision that gets added to the Bill of Rights section of a constitution and recognizes and protects the right to clean water, clean air, a stable climate, and a healthy environment as an inalienable right. And by virtue of the fact that it's in the Bill of Rights section, it protects our right to a healthy environment in the same way we protect those other fundamental freedoms we hold dear. As you said, in the same way we protect the right to free speech and freedom of religion and our due process rights. We all know when those rights get infringed upon by our government officials, nobody sits down and takes it, right? People get incensed and they rise up and battle to defend and protect those fundamental rights. Well, if we can get a Green Amendment added to every state constitution across the nation and ultimately at the federal level, we would say have that same highest legal protection for our right to a healthy environment. And we would also give people that same sense of empowerment to fight for their right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment.
Okay. All right. What was the impetus for you writing your book, The Green Amendment, Securing Our Rights to a Healthy Environment? I think I have the answer to it, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, we had been for years battling against fracking, a highly polluting industrial operation that was just wreaking havoc on Pennsylvania's environments and communities. There was the Pennsylvania legislature, along, frankly, with the industry, crafted and passed a very pro-fracking piece of legislation that was really going to help the industry to advance in ways that would be devastating for Pennsylvania communities and the environment. After this law was passed, we were trying to figure out a way, like, how can we challenge a law that's been passed by the legislature and signed by the governor? And what we realized was that actually in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, there was in place a Green Amendment in the Pennsylvania Constitution. It had been ignored for over 40 years as just being a statement of good public policy, but it was there on the books. So we actually brought a lawsuit to challenge this pro-fracking piece of legislation. We relied on Pennsylvania's long-ignored Green Amendment. And we ended up getting an amazing victory out of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court that used that Green Amendment to say, yes, in fact, this piece of legislation that would give the fracking industry the power of eminent domain, the right to drill and frack everywhere, including the heart of our residential communities, would give them waivers from environmental protection laws, that in fact, that law had gone too far and was going to overreach and violate the environmental rights of the people of Pennsylvania. And so in that moment, with that victory, we defeated some of these most devastating aspects of Act 13. We restored to the people of Pennsylvania their constitutional right to a healthy environment. And I was able to witness the power of having a green amendment in your constitution. So I then went and looked. And what I found was that there was only one other state in the United States of America that has a green amendment, Montana. And so that set me on the path to really fleshing this idea out and trying to start a national movement.
Do you find that the legislators are really respecting this, or is it just another law or right that's on the books?
Well,
what's been the reception?
Yeah, so in Pennsylvania, it really depends, as you can imagine, right? You have legislators who want to do the right thing or simply need the information, right, to understand what the right thing to do is. And they will respect the Green Amendment, and they want to learn about it, and they have embraced it in taking good actions. But you also have your, frankly, your anti-environment legislators, those who are more beholden to industry and want to advance industry because perhaps industry makes donations to them, right, politically or otherwise. And so for whatever reason, they want to be in bed with the industry. They will then not like the Green Amendment, and they do not embrace it. But the beauty of a Green Amendment is this is a constitutional right. And so actually, every government official, whether they want to be or do not want to be, are duty bound to comply with the constitutional amendment. And when they fail us and when they ignore our constitutional rights, we actually can take those legislators to court and use the courts to advance the Constitution. So it's a mixed bag in terms of their reaction. But in terms of the power that we have in this constitutional provision, it's the same kind of power we have when we are seeking to enforce those other fundamental freedoms that we all hold dear and have learned about our entire lives. Again, like free speech and freedom of religion.
Well, I think the real key is with young folks, because they are really going to be the ones who have to deal with this. And so we've got two sitting right here. And I'll start with you, Isabella. I mean, what was the impetus for you to become involved? I mean, you've been working with me for the last year on our Earth Day focus, our Earth Day event. And so what is it about the environment that just really grabs at you? Because you are really dedicated to it.
I think it was the just the aspect that it's for everyone. It's the one place, it's the one thing like on Earth that we have is our environment that makes us all on an equal playing field. There's no class or like in the environment. There's no like level of like you're better because like you're better in this environment. It's like it's for everyone. It's not for just the rich or like the poor. It's for everyone. And it made me realize that like it's not fair that it's not helping people, that we're having, that people are destroying the very place we live and we don't get to say anything about it. Or if we do, we're silenced by like big corporations and big industries that are treated like citizens but are not citizens. They're not the individual citizens being affected by that choice, and they shouldn't be treated like that. And to give them the rights of a person, or to give them the rights of to have the power over your environment without having the say of the people, and it just seems so wrong that I wasn't allowed to say that I do not want fracking, or I do not want an administration that doesn't acknowledge climate change, where you can't even say the word climate change.
You couldn't here in Florida. Really?
Rick Scott had...
She's telling the truth.
Like, banned the word. You could not mention it.
State employees could not say the word.
Wow.
Okay.
That's intense.
That's intense. Dude. Okay. Not yet? Okay. We'll come back to you. I was just going to ask you what made you want to, you know, how do you feel about the environment? How do you feel about the abuse of the environment? Because you may be like me. I mean, it's like, you know, it impacts everyone. And I think that is really the calling card for me. I don't care where you live. I don't care who you are. I don't care, you know, what your background is. The environment, the air we breathe, the water we drink is going to impact you. okay? Rich, poor, black, white, does not matter. You are going to have to deal with it. And I think that was really the impetus for me to really become involved. You know, you see individuals, it has a health impact. And you go to school and you have lead in the water. We've had that problem. So all of those things that come together, and it doesn't matter, again, who you are. If you go to school, you're going to drink water out the water fountain. Everybody drinks the water. Everybody, if you breathe air, it's the same thing. So, and you look at the asthma rates, you know, you look at cancer, you look at all these rates that may be higher in certain populations, but it's across the board, no matter what. So, you know, that's why I was asking you, how do you feel just when you think about the environment and the abuse, you know, that...
Yeah. A lot of, like, really beautiful places that, like, you can't find anywhere else in the world. And I know the Colorado Springs.
Excellent example.
It used to be, like, clear. I remember being able to see to the bottom, and now it's like dirty and mucky, and you can see through it, and that's a real sign of climate and humans affecting nature that I've seen in real life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a excellent example, because we've got it all around us here, particularly in Florida. What states have the most environmental protection laws? Or do you look at them in that way? I mean,
yeah.
Pennsylvania and Montana are leading the way.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't actually look at it that way. Every state and every environment, every river, every forest, right, has its pluses and its minuses. And so, you know, while you can look at the state of Pennsylvania and say when it comes to constitutional recognition and protection of environmental rights, Pennsylvania is amongst the states leading the pack. You can also look at Pennsylvania and say, but they're still fracking,
yeah,
right? And they're still allowing fracking.
Right.
Now, one of the things that we're trying to do in Pennsylvania is prove the point that you can't frack and protect the constitutional right to a healthy environment.
Hold your thoughts for a moment. I'm interrupting, but I'll get right back at you. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this is a very special program celebrating and recognizing Earth Day, which was on Monday, April 22nd. Joining us, we have Maya K. Van Rossum. Maya is an environmental advocate. She does it all, and we are just very honored to have her. And I have two sales students, two good folks. Always glad to have them, Isabella Rose and Jude Countryman. Maya, I had to interrupt you. So if you continue.
No worries.
Okay.
Yeah. So every single state, right, has its pluses and its minuses when it comes to the environment. You know, and they may be very good at protecting waterways, but they may be very bad at protecting air quality or preventing the use of dangerous herbicides and pesticides. So I really just try to look at the totality of what's happening in a state. But what I do know is every single state across the nation and at our federal level, all of our environmental protection laws are written in a way that accepts pollution and degradation of the environment as a necessary evil, something that we're going to work to manage. We're going to manage the who, the when, the where it happens, but isn't focused first primarily on prevention of pollution and harm. And so that's why in every state we really need to advance this Green Amendment concept, because when you have a properly written constitutional right to a healthy environment, actually, you are legally bound, constitutionally bound, to focus first on preventing harm, preventing degradation that could overreach and violate people's environmental rights. So we actually turn all of the laws on their head. It doesn't mean that all the laws go away. They're still on the books and they still have to be enforced. But part of the enforcement of those laws begins with how do we prevent harm and degradation first? And then to the extent that it is impossible to avoid that, how do you use these laws to better protect our environment and protect our communities?
Okay. Comments?
I do. So in a state or Florida where we do have – where a fracking incident did happen in 2013 and 2014 on New Year's Eve where a company illegally fracked. It wasn't – they weren't allowed to do that because it was still coming up in legislation. And as – whose legislation now has three bills to ban fracking but are dying bills. They're not really coming up. How would we use – because we do have in our Constitution the language that says we have to protect our environment. But it's written in a way that's definitely bendable by the administration, that they can bend it in the way they want to. And I was wondering, like, how we take the language we already have and try to evolve it into that Green Amendment movement. When big fracking companies come in and they have – and their excuses is it creates jobs, it creates gas, like these things that they use to influence citizens who are like, we're going to create so many jobs, we're going to create so much money for the state. Like, how do you counter those things that people want? They want jobs and they want more money. And how do you influence them to be like, well, that's not the greater good?
So number one, you can't take the current language and translate it, turn it into a Green Amendment. You just fundamentally can't. The way the language is written, it's written to describe environmental protection as good policy. It's written to say the way you protect the environment is through your legislators passing laws. Well, your legislators already passed laws, right? And we have all this pollution and harm. And most important, none of that language is in the Bill of Rights section of the state constitution. So legally, fundamentally, it is not on par with all of those other human and civil rights that are in the Bill of Rights section. So you can keep that current language, but you need to create a new provision that would be added to the Bill of Rights section of the Constitution. That's number one. Number two, I think to the extent that you raised fracking as an example, that fracking happened legally or illegally because there was no law in place. It's one of the beautiful things about a Green Amendment is when you have a gap in the law, when you have something that's harmful to the environment that's not regulated, the Green Amendment becomes your regulation. So if you think about the situation with fracking happening in a state where there are no laws that may apply to it, that may prevent it, or when you think about the use of a chemical known as PFOA or PFOS, those are the chemicals used in Teflon, right? And still today, in most states and at the national level, we don't have rules that prevent the use of these PFCs, and yet they're getting into people's drinking water supplies, and they are known carcinogens. But for the most part across the nation, in most places, some places it's changing, but in most places you don't have a law to regulate that. What a Green Amendment says is you have to protect the people's right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. And the Constitution itself becomes a legal actor. So if you can show that that fracking operation or the use of that chemical that is not regulated will infringe on the right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment, your Green Amendment becomes your law that helps you protect yourself. When it comes to people arguing that, well, we want jobs, we want money, and therefore you have to allow pollution and degradation. Actually, that's just not true. It's just fundamentally not true. You can build, you can create energy, you can advance all sorts of programs and initiatives and goals in ways that advance jobs, advance the economy, create energy, build homes, and protect the environment at the same time. You just have to change the way you go about it. And in fact, pretty much across the board, what experience shows us is that when you advance energy creation, industrial operations, development projects in a way that protect the environment, you often make more money. You save money in how you undertake those operations. Often, for every $1 million invested in clean energy versus dirty fossil fuels, you actually create 3 to 5 times the number of jobs, and you create all the energy you need, and you prevent all the illness and all the harms and all the heartaches and costs that come from environmental degradation. So on that front, our work as environmentalists is to go forth and show people how they can advance their other goals and protect the environment at the same time, and how, in fact, doing that, you know, helps them very literally save the lives of their family members, whether it's their health or just the joy they experience in being able to be out in beautiful nature, or helping them not breathe contaminated air that very literally will prevent them from being able to learn as well, because it will reduce their IQ. I mean, these are the things pollution does to people, right? So we just have to go back and retrain people to understand environmental protection is a good thing all the way around. And those people who falsely pit the environment against the economy and jobs, they're simply lying to you. And they're lying to you because they're greedy. And they want money, or they want something, or they want political power. Mm-hmm. And we just have to fend against that and out them for what they are.
Maya, will you share with us exactly what fracking is, what it involves?
So fracking is a highly destructive industrial operation. What you have in places like Pennsylvania and West Virginia is you have, in the geology of the earth, deep down in the earth, you have shales, right, of rock formations that have little bubbles of natural gas in them. And in order to release that gas, what the industry does is they drill about a mile down into the earth, and then they literally turn a bend and they drill horizontally, now sometimes 1, 2, even more miles horizontally through the geology of the earth. They then take 10, 15 million gallons of water per well. At this point, I think the range is, it used to be around 5, and now it's about double. So you're talking about 10, 15 or more. Take all that fresh water from the surface of the earth, shoot it down that borehole in order for it to go through the little holes that you've exploded along the way, mm-hmm. through the piping, mm-hmm. so that that water can be forced into the shale and literally shatter the shale, releasing those little bubbles of gas. The thing is you have to do a lot of deforestation and devastation on the land surface, mm-hmm. to make way for the fracking operations. You have to use a lot of fossil fuel driven industrial operations, generators and compressors and trucks. Like, it's anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 truck trips per well. The industry adds dangerous toxins and chemicals to the fresh water in order to help with this this process of being able to shoot the water down into the borehole, into the shale. And so the water actually becomes highly toxified before it even gets shot down the borehole. But as that water then circulates through the geology of the earth, it extracts other contaminants, including radioactive materials from the geology of the earth that it brings to the surface. Long story short, the water that comes back to the surface of the earth is so highly contaminated that even the industry doesn't have a way to properly treat it. So we're using massive volumes of fresh water decimating habitats, resulting in the release of significant quantities of hazardous air pollutants, but also climate-changing emissions like methane. All the way around, it's a very destructive fossil fuel energy extraction process. And it's not necessary, because clean energy options are here today. We can use wind and solar and geothermal to supply all of our energy needs and avoid all of that environmental devastation, which is resulting in people breathing bad air, drinking contaminated water, and having literally the quality of their lives destroyed by 24/7 noise, light, and pollution from these fracking operations.
Why do you feel like you receive so much resistance? When listening to you, it all makes sense. It's a better way to deal with everything, yet you have so much resistance.
Because the industry...
Is it money?
Well, that's part of it. The industry has been allowed to invest tremendously in marketing, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. so they tell you that fracked gas is... It's natural gas, they call it.
That's right.
And it's clean burning natural gas that reduces air pollution. They forget all of the devastation that has to happen to extract that gas. They don't tell people that that gas is methane. It's a climate changing emission, right? In and of itself. It really is a dirty fossil fuel. So many people who don't have the time to do the research or learn about this, you know, like Isabella clearly has, they are just listening to what the industry is telling them because it makes sense. Oh, we need a bridge fuel. I don't have to change anything in my life. So a lot of it is just lack of awareness, tremendous investment by industry into marketing. And then also there are politicians who get lots of money, into their political coffers and campaigns from the industry in order to perpetuate the lie that fracked shale gas is a bridge fuel that we need to get to a better, cleaner future. That is a lie. We have clean energy options today. We just need government officials to help us advance those clean energy strategies rather than doing all the work government is doing to try to help advance dirty fossil fuels like fracked gas and even revive coal at this point, which is absolutely absurd.
Crazy. That's crazy. Comments, yeah.
I was going to say something. With fracking, especially with all this that's going on, I think one of the biggest steps in the Green Amendment movement is being able to separate, like, the lobbying and the industries from politics. I think that's become such a major thing. It's almost guaranteed that if an industry or, like, a lobbyist sponsors a bill in Congress, it's almost guaranteed to go through when they pay. And it's hard to be as, like, citizens to know that, like, I can voice my opinions and I can call my representatives, but if they're given $4 million from a fracking company, my opinion doesn't matter as much as that $4 million.
Right.
So I think it's this whole thing that people need to realize that the environment is not a – the environmental issues are not a upper-class problem. It is not – it's not – it's a classless problem. It is a problem that is for everyone, that we should all be concerned about. And it's not something that needs to be concerned about with, like, richer communities or anything. It's this whole thing that you're – we're all going to live in the same place. Why shouldn't it be, like, a good place? Like, why aren't we, like, guaranteed clean air and clean water when we think about it every day? You think that you should have that. And that's the crazy thing is that everybody assumes that they should have that. But everybody shouldn't assume that because there are so many legislations in America and states that have taken that right away because they've never informed their citizens that they had that right in the first place. Which is insane that this is not being taught in school systems to be like, everybody deserves clean water. Like the kids, like the people in Flint, Michigan who have lead in their pipes where it's like nobody told them that was happening. They weren't told that their children were ingesting lead from like the school, like getting lead poisoning. And when they were told it was too late. And it's this thing of like it's becoming too late to change things. We're truly making such a big impact on our environment and the climate. Like our climate won't be the same. We've already done so much damage and to still have people who don't believe in climate change is disheartening in terms of like you don't – then what do you believe it's happening? What do you think the floods and the wildfires – why do you think these things are happening so rapidly and so much and are so damaging? It's because we've done – some irreversible damage to the earth, and if we have to start now if we want to help it. And it will never be back to the state that it was in, like the perfect, obviously, with the amount of things that have happened. But it's still crazy to me that we are electing people and we're endorsing people as citizens that don't have that best interest in mind, that don't have the citizens' best interest in mind, that we didn't even know we had in mind. That I didn't grow up thinking that, like, I deserve clean water. I assumed I was drinking clean water. And then I realized it's like, that might not be the case.
Right.
What do you say to someone that says climate change is real? I don't even know what to say. I'm like, look around you. Like, what do you say?
And there are some people, right? There are some people that are just never going to listen. And so truly, especially if they're in government office and they are a climate change denier, I mean, the truth is all you can do is work to get them out of office and put somebody in who truly believes in science, facts, and reality. Because I truly, I don't really believe, at least in terms of politicians, I can't believe that there are people who really honestly don't believe in climate change.
How can they not?
Right. I think it's more, it's a politically expedient position that they want to take that allows them to justify the taking of the money from the dirty fossil fuel people, which frankly makes them even worse people, right, than they are for denier.
Money.
Because if they know it's true and they're intentionally denying it, that's a really bad person. And the only thing you can do with that person is not have them in a position of power. But that's work. And I get it. I get passing a green amendment. I get getting good people into office is a big job. And it's a lot of work. But as we all know here in this room and everybody out in the audience starts, every time we work towards some success, we have to start somewhere. We have to start sometime. Right? The house is never going to get painted until you take that first brush stroke. It's the same thing with a Green Amendment and electing good people to office.
I agree. There is, what is it, For the Generations? That's a guide that you set up, you and the Riverkeepers Network set up. You created it to protect the environment. And I wanted to ask you, what are the initiatives? Who are your allies? How has that...
So as a result of the work we started at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, I've actually founded a new organization called Green Amendments for the Generations. Okay. And this new initiative is about going around the nation and inspiring the passage of green amendments and helping communities do the work necessary to get to the passage of green amendments. We want to start at the states because we'll be more successful. Ultimately, we want to get green amendments at the federal level. The website is called, though, www.forthegenerations.org, and that's where you can get the information.
Well, hold your thoughts. We're going to take a break, but we'll return momentarily.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned into 411 Teen. This hour, I'm talking with Maya Van Rossum, environmental activist, and students from Sale High School. When we talk about advocacy, we can't help but address environmental injustices because there are groups of people we find the disadvantaged, various ethnic groups, minority groups, economically disadvantaged, where we find a lot of environmental injustices are focused. I wanted to ask you to address that particular component of environmental injustices.
The reality is that minority communities, immigrant communities, and low-income communities have a much higher rate of exposure to dangerous toxins and environmental degradation than everybody else because their communities are actually targeted for the placement of highly polluting industrial operations, that next highway that people want to see, any number of things, the new pharmaceutical company that's going to result in pollution or degradation. And so what has actually happened over time is legislators intentionally sacrifice those minority communities and sacrifice their environment in order to be able to protect the richer, whiter people that are somewhere else, right? I mean, that's reality. And so when you look at the science, minority communities have a much higher rate of exposure to toxins of all kinds. One of the things that a Green Amendment does is it gives everybody the same constitutional right to pure water, clean air, a stable climate, and a healthy environment. And so legally now, constitutionally, everybody has the same constitutional right, and every government official is duty-bound to treat everybody equitably because we do all have those same rights. So a properly written, a properly framed and placed Green Amendment should go a long way towards strengthening the environmental justice movement and preventing all those sacrifice zones that we have seen for all those years, right, and continue to see today.
Do you find that communities, I think I know the answer before I even asked you this, but are receptive, particularly when I say communities are receptive, I'm talking about, well, let me restate that. Do you think that, let's look at Florida. We have a lot of environmental injustices here, okay? Energy injustices, for example, placing sewage plants. Is that considered an injustice?
If you're piling it on into a community that's already overburdened with other pollution, absolutely.
Okay. How do that, any suggestions as to how to address that for the community, at the community level?
The only, you know, the way I know how to do it is to go into communities and talk with them about what's happening and help them get engaged. And I understand that for some urban communities, that can be very, very difficult. They are facing many other challenges, putting food on the table, dealing with gun violence, right? Dealing with all sorts of job loss or joblessness or food deserts, right? The inability to even access good quality food when they're, you know, when they go to purchase it. So, you know, but the truth is, so they're, while they're focused on these other things, they may be missing what is happening, what government is doing to them by piling on all of these polluting operations into their communities. But when you go in and you speak with people, they care deeply, just as deeply as everybody else, once they're given the information, right? And once somebody can come in and speak with them. And frankly, I have this with every community. When I go into a community to talk about pipelines, right, and the pipeline that's about to cut through their community, I don't care if it's an urban community, suburban community, or rural community. Most of them don't know what it actually means for them.
Exactly.
And when you explain it, they care and they get involved. For those communities that are already overburdened, truthfully, I think when you go in and give them the information, they care even more deeply and they can get even more involved. But you have to help give the tools because they do and may have so many other challenges that they are facing. So you have to be able to be willing to put in that extra effort and time and energy to help, recognizing the reality that they are being overburdened in so many ways that are unfair. The environment is just one piece of the inequity that they're experiencing.
Come on.
I mean, I agree with you full-heartedly, especially just in like terms of when I grew up, like my mom was a single mother and it was just kind of like the challenges that we dealt with that like we were on welfare and we did live in a trailer park for a little bit. And it was this whole thing of like that the environment would have not been the number one issue. It would have been like how am I going to get to school? How is she going to feed me? And how are we going to how am I going to be watched when I get home? And it's sad to think that that they're burdened with so much stuff and that the government is taking advantage of that. They know it's like we've already given them so much other stuff to deal with that they're not even going to understand what a pipeline means. So we might as well just say that we're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they going to do?
Attitude.
When they already feel underrepresented in their administration. And not until this year where the House of Representatives is almost 50-50 women and men, still more men than women, and not even – and a fraction of that is only – like some of that is only women of color. There's barely any. And especially to have a Senate where it's almost virtually
–
all white men. And to have that kind of disheartening feeling of being like, they obviously care, but they don't know how to work towards it. I think that's the biggest part is that like, I imagine most of them, all of them care that what's happening to them and all of them are concerned and want a better place, but have nobody in their administration or someone to represent them to do that. Because it's hard as like a low-income community to gather everybody and be like, you need like one person, at least just one person in your administration to help just a little bit, to give you just a piece of representation to talk to. Because it's intimidating to go up to call any
sure.
administrator and ask them for something.
Yeah.
I find it strange that the amount of plastic everywhere, like a walk down the street enough see plastic on the sidewalk, and I might oh that's normal, but that's not normal. Someone left the plastic there, so I'm imagining if someone throws up in a toxic environment, they may not know like this is bad. So I need to tell people this isn't normal. When you have rights to have a clean environment.
Yeah, it seems like the stores should have some responsibility, because they just distribute all that plastic and all those plastic bags.
Well, I think it is fair to say that everybody should have some responsibility. But the fact of the matter is, if our government officials would stop enacting laws and policies and programs and initiatives that were designed to advance the use of plastics, advance the use of dirty fossil fuels, advance development in the floodplains where we know people are going to flood, advance redevelopment in the floodplains when somebody has already flooded, right? Then so many of the problems we have, we wouldn't be facing. I mean, but the laws very often are actually set up to advance these environmentally harmful practices. So yes, we need people to take personal responsibility, to not use the plastics, not throw it in the street when they are in that moment when they need to, right? To not take the plastic bag. We do need stores to say, I'm not gonna hand out plastic bags. No plastic in my store. But we also need government officials to put in place rules that say, in fact, no, we're not going to allow plastic in our communities or single-use plastic bags in our communities. There are towns across the country that are doing that. We need towns to say, no, we're not going to allow the use of these plastic straws, right? So there's responsibility to go around, but I would say to you that government and industry bear a greater part of the burden than everyday people do, because they are actually the ones that are advancing the programs and making the investments that are perpetuating all of these devastating harms. And for people, again, sometimes a lot of people just don't know. A lot of people didn't know that plastic straws were so damaging until they saw that horrifying video of the sea turtle, having the straw extracted from its nose. Right? And how painful that was. So it's a learning process for all of us. But I'll tell you, those legislators and those business operators, they know what they're doing. And so they need to take a greater proportion of the responsibility for making things right. And they're the ones that are getting the profits out of it, right? You know, well, so you're going to get the profits. You better put in take the extra responsibility, right, to deal with the harms. And that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think one of the best ways to get people involved in a Green Amendment movement and in an environmental change movement is just to know that they don't have to do the biggest thing. You don't have to start the environmental revolution by yourself. I think that's the biggest thing. I think that's why it's so intimidating, is because it is such a big issue, and everybody – it's like everybody thinks that they have to spearhead it, that they have to be the one who has to take, where it's like, no, like you can have a group do it, but also there are just so many little things that you can do to help and to like that day to day and to remind other people to do that will eventually start it. Like no plastic straws, like buy a reusable straw, like bring it with you everywhere. Get a reusable water bottle, bring it with you everywhere. It's like ask for paper or just bring like your own bag to the grocery store and make sure, you know, like you're buying stuff that can be recyclable. Like no more like styrofoam soda cups where it's like, you're going to buy those every day, where it's like, rather maybe just have like your reusable cup you put it in, a reusable straw you put it in. And I think that's the most intimidating thing that I've learned, is that some people just don't get involved with the environment because they don't know how to. They don't know where to start and where to help. And I think the biggest is like maybe just like reminding yourself every day, it's like, I'm not going to use that plastic straw. Or I'm not going to get that plastic water bottle. I'm going to get a reusable water bottle that'll save me money in the long run. It'll save me and it'll save the environment a little bit at a time. And it's just being able to know that like there are little things you can do to help, and all those little things will eventually come up where you can understand this topic more and understand the effects of it more and be able to call your legislator and be like, I need you to do this change for me, and calling them every day to make that change for you and understanding the commitment you have to have, because it's a scary thing to realize that if you're going to take this on, it's a commitment for life. because it can't be just a temporary commitment. You can't ever stop once you start. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? There's always improvement, and there's always improvement available. We're never going to have a perfect environment, but we want to make it as perfect as we can for the citizens that are here. And I think the biggest part is just being able to know that you can make a change as long as you're persistent enough and you're always there. Because eventually they'll give in. They'll get annoyed enough.
Okay. Well, let's talk about energy injustices, what I call energy injustice. Things like coal and uranium mining and oil drilling. What are viable energy alternatives? Would you share those with us in these last few minutes when we talk about that?
Solar, wind, geothermal, and more clean renewable energy options are evolving every single day.
Okay.
We have experts that have done the work to prove that we can fuel every state in this nation, our nation as a whole, and the world many times over off of clean renewable energy options.
But what needs to happen? Says coal is the answer.
Our president is an unintelligent oaf. I'm sorry.
And but I mean,
let's speak truth to power.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so,
either that and or that he is so highly corrupted by his industry relationships that he will not speak the truth and will not do what is right. And we have to speak reality about this. When it comes to the environment, this Donald Trump is devastating. But on the other hand, I will tell you that Barack Obama, President Bush, President Clinton, they all supported dirty fossil fuels and fracked gas, right?
Yes.
So, you know, we have a long history of government officials across the board. Just the current person that sits in the Oval Office is even more extreme and trying to revive these devastating fossil fuels. All of that being said, clean energy options are available. They can fuel us, but we need our government officials to put in place the policies and the regulations and the initiatives that will make clean energy options available to everybody. Right now, what they do is they work hard to advance dirty fossil fuels. Mm-hmm. And that's why dirty fossil fuels are more available. We need to flip that. But as Isabella said, that requires making those phone calls to say to your government officials, I want clean energy in my community, and you need to make it available.
You had some.
I don't know why anyone would want a job at a coal mine. It's apparently dangerous, and people who work at these dirty energy places also have bad health. So it's like harmful to the people making it too. So,
okay.
And I do want to say I should not have used disparaging language to characterize anybody. Perhaps I shouldn't have said an oaf, but uneducated and corrupt. Those I'll stick with.
Well, yeah, something, Isabella.
I think one of the biggest atrocities surrounding clean energy is that we're always told constantly it's too expensive. It's solar panels are too expensive. Wind energy doesn't work. It's too expensive. All these things we're told, it's not a state can't do it or you can't do it because it's going to be too much, which is just not true. It's not true. It's an available thing, and it's something we've developed and something that isn't expensive for a state to put in. It can happen quickly and it can happen efficiently, and to have people say to you that it's too expensive, or to have bills that come out of legislation where it's told that well, we don't do that because it'd be too expensive and I don't want to spend my tax money on that. When it's well, you don't want to spend your tax money on clean water and clean air and clean energy and a better environment. That's what you're going to pay for, and that's what you should have your taxes for, is to have clean water. You have a Clean Water Act that is actually going to be a Clean Water Act, that is not going to be something that they can – that's it's a Clean Water Act for all these industries, but this industry doesn't have to go by it. Or and then to have the influence of obviously when states have such a big influence from industries, the proposal of that solar panel probably isn't going to go through because they're backed by the money. It's well, no, because that takes them out of business. And we just need more industries are coming that are for clean energy. Like, if that's what it takes, like, people should be for it too. But I think there needs to be industries that do come up to do that, because there's only so much a citizen can do, especially now that industries do have so much control, is that we need at least some that are for clean energy to also help us.
But well, that's where legislators come in.
We're out of time. You know? I mean, it just flies. But I have been talking with Maya Van Rossum and students from SAIL, Isabel Rose and Jude Countryman. To my listening audience, thank you for your time and your ear and your interest. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Team. The 411 Team was produced by Dr. Liz Holyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Ken Smith. If you would like to participate in 411 Team or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. 411 Team archives are available as streaming audio and as downloads from WFSU.org. Check us out on Facebook.